So in our last class on Wednesday, there were some things that we were looking at, and we spent a little time in time references, which we usually don't do. So I appreciate your patience. Some of y'all that was probably not fun for. But any of you people that are math people probably were interested a little bit. So just figuring out some of the different things in the time, because in these time references there was different things we could figure out, and we could even figure out times we're already showing some of these kings as when they reigned, and then with the information here we could even back up and kind of verify that. But I'm not going to go into all that this morning. I did want to mention one thing that we were talking about, and that is because with King Tibni, I just wanted to reference it again one more time, because I just found it very interesting that we only had these two verses on him. And I think within these other verses, although it does not speak of him specifically, there's things we can bring about that gives us a little detail on maybe the time that he served as king. So if you'll look back at verse, I just want to look at three verses just to make a quick point on this. In 1 Kings 16, verse 21. So now we remember, and if you've already been marking as far as when these kings reigned, you probably have around 885 for Zimri, as far as when he died. So that also tells us that these two, or Zimri, that tells us that these, when these two kings, Tibni and Omri, take over, that we're talking about around 885. So in 1 Kings 16:21, it says, "Then the people of Israel were divided into two parts. Half of the people followed Tibni, the son of Ginath, to make him king, and the other half followed Omri." Now remember, it was brought up, you know, was he really king? That's something you'll have to look at for yourself, but note what we're going to learn in here, because it's going to say something about how much time lapsed before they call Omri the king. So, verse 22, "But the people who followed Omri prevailed over the people who followed Tibni, the son of Ginath, and Tibni died, and Omri became king." So we see 885, these two men, you have some following one, some following the other, but then you get to a point where it said that when Tibni died, that Omri became king. So I think that's the idea that he wholly became king, or fully became king. He was the only king reigning out of the two. But then it gives us a time reference at that. So let's see, verse 23, it says that in the 31st year of Asa, king of Judah, Omri became king over Israel and reigned 12 years. That's a note you can use for backing up and verifying. But he reigned 6 years in Tirzah. So the idea is we want to see the 31st year of King Asa. I'm sorry. So that's going to be about 880, 881. So just saying all of this to make the point that even though it didn't say how long that Tibni reigned, we're looking at probably 4 to 5 years. So I'm saying probably 885 to around 880. So not a big deal, but it, you know, some of that information's in the verses. So I just wanted to bring that out, and we will move on. So you know, there was another thing we brought up in the last class. Steve even brought to our attention some of the things that these nations were going through. When you think about it, nation right now, or the Israel, they were having these kings just killing each other. And, you know, this, because in one chapter, we look at over five kings. So you're seeing some of this stuff going on, and the point he was bringing up was, think about what they went through during this time. And we can consider us. You know, we think things are going crazy in our nation and stuff like that. One thing we can draw from this, and that goes to kind of Mark's point in his prayer, is, you know, the example. Although all of these things are going on, we see, well, we're going to see it. I don't think it's stated it yet. It's in some of the future chapters. We're going to see this idea of 7,000 that are faithful. Even though all of these things, Jeroboam, that's created for his most part his own religion, you know, you have all these different things, all these bad examples going on that the verses state that, you know, they were, the things they were bringing Israel to sin. And it's because of the example of these leaders, the things they were, a lot of people were following them. But it still states, or will state, that there were 700 or 7,000 of them that were faithful. So no matter the things that might go on around us, that tells us, and we can overcome any of these things that are going on. Let's just remember that, and that we would keep our faith strong. That's not what determines of this life, obstacles or whatever it may be. That's not what, you know, remember the blessings we have of life eternal, and might that await us. So let's and not be influenced by whatever evil things might be around us. Thoughts or comments before I make one more point? Sorry, throat's a little dry this morning. We ended up the class and kind of building up on that. 16 and 25, we ended the class looking at that. So let's start there. Let's start at verse 16:25. Talking about King Omri, it said, who were before him. So it states that he acted more wickedly before all, that we see how things are building. Well, I'm not even going to state anymore. We'll say some more here in just a minute. We're going to see how things, we will jump over to lesson 4. And like I said, we'll touch on that just a little bit. Copy of lesson 4. Okay. Lesson 4 is going to cover 1 Kings 29 all the way to 2 Kings 1. So we're going to cover all of that. So we will have information in those chapters. And it also will also provide more information about some of the same things that we'll be reading about in 4. So that's going to be lesson 4. But in lesson 4, I started out, although it was the end of the chapter, some of the other things we were talking about, now you're going to go into Kings 16:29 tells us that now Ahab, the son of Omri, became king over Israel in the 38th year of king of Judah. And Ahab, the son of Omri, reigned over Israel in Samaria. It'd be helpful to you that you can put on your chart as far as how long he reigned and time reference as far as who was king when he became king. Now, we're going to talk more about Ahab in some of these following verses or following chapters, but in just a short little section of the end of chapter 16, we're already getting an idea of how bad he is. We'll see. Well, let's look at verse 30. And like I said, we're going to see there seems to be some type of a progression, if you will, in this wickedness of these kings. So in verse 30, it says, Ahab, son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. Remember, we've already seen that term in the previous chapter. So all before those that were before him, it came about as though it had been a trivial thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he married Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went to serve Baal and worship him. So he erected an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria. Ahab also made the Asherah. Thus Ahab did more to provoke the Lord of God, or to provoke the Lord God of Israel, than all the kings of Israel who were before him. So it says that he did things to provoke the Lord because of his evils. These evils were more than all those that were before him. And we already started off, we've already seen Jeroboam and his evils. And then we just spoke about in verse 25 of the last chapter about Omri, where it said the same statement that he had done more evil than those before him. Now we get to his son, and it says the same statement. So it's almost like we've got a progression of this wickedness going on. So again, just for us to get an idea of some of the things that are going on here and how God sees it. You know, because it's just the way that it states it, that he was provoking the Lord. So just wanted to bring that up so we would see that we have here in these chapters. In we read that. I jumped ahead of myself. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Not serving him, but it is turning away from him completely. And then I think Aaron is going to be in the same thing. Solomon, he built the temples and stuff like that to her gods. And we'll see what kind of influence, you know, that God warned him about in the Bible chapters.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, if you didn't hear Linda, because that's so true, that this Jezebel, and we'll read more about her. There's some things we will learn about her. She was not a good woman, to say the least. And what Linda was saying was this example that she brings because of what she was brought up in, because of who her dad was, the king there. And it kind of goes back to some of the same things we were talking about when we started the classes, and that was the idea of the influence, these outside influences that these kings are allowing to bring in with the wives that they marry. So we saw that with Solomon, and that's what started all of this thing, because of these influences and the things that the idolatry that they brought. So let's keep all of that in mind as well. Good comment, Miss Linda. Anybody else have a comment? Okay. We're going to see in this section, in chapter 17 through 19, we're going to see Elijah. He's going to be introduced in this section, and then we'll see the interaction that he has through these chapters. We won't see him in chapter 20. So we'll see him 17, 18, 19, not 20. But then we'll see him again in chapter 21. So a lot of this information, we're going to find out things about Elisha and his part in some of the things going on. So I asked the question on the lesson, what does Elijah, did I say Elisha? If I said Elisha, I meant Elijah. This gets to those confusing parts, the names you get. So if you hear me say the wrong one, please correct me so I don't throw everybody off. So I hope I said Elijah. So what does Elijah tell Ahab that is about to take place? Okay, no rain, this drought. Okay, so he tells about a drought that's coming, verse 1. And I put on the lesson, who is going to cause it and be in control of the situation that Elijah is talking about? Okay, the God. God is. It states that this will be by his word, but Elijah's. But where does he get it? He starts his statement to Ahab with, "As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, before whom I stand." So he serves God. Elijah is a prophet of the living God. So this is this. We're going to have this drought we see, and then we see that the Lord sends Elijah away. And I put on there, where does he send him? Where is he going? Okay, the Brook of Cherith, which is east of the Jordan. So he sends him away. And then we're going to see here, let's read verse 4. Of chapter 17. We're in 17 now. Let's read 4 through 7. It says, "It shall be that you will drink of the brook." And, well, let me back up. Let's go to verse 3. It says, "Go away from here and turn eastward and hide yourself by the brook Cherith, which is east of the Jordan. It shall be that you will drink of the brook, and I have commanded the ravens to provide for you there." So he went and did according to the word of the Lord, for he went and lived by the brook Cherith, which is east of the Jordan. The ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning, and bread and meat in the evening, and he would drink from the brook. It happened after a while that the brook dried up, because there was no rain in the land. This whole chapter in 17 is going to be pretty much about Elijah. And in this section right here, we see that the Lord provides. So the Lord is providing for Elijah. He provided for Elijah one way until that ran out. And we'll see here in a minute that he's going to provide for him in another way, and for others as well. So God provides for Elijah in this way until the water ran out, the Brook of Cherith. And that was just because of this drought that was going on. God could have made some provision for water there, but he chose not to. The water running out was part of this plan. So part of this drought. So what God does is he provides for him another way. So he provides in a different way. And still, God is still the one that's providing for his needs. And Elijah knows this. Elijah knows this. So that being said, after this brook dries up, How does the Lord provide for Elijah?
The widow
Zarephath. The widow Zarephath. Okay. Yes, ma'am. He uses the widow, a widow in Zarephath. And so what we just read, he provided where he was at the brook. The brook provided water. He had the ravens provide food. So God was providing him. And now we're going to get into a section that there's another way that is being provided for him. Yes, sir. Yes, a good point, Steve. This builds upon which I don't think there's anyone in here that doubts what God is able to do. But that's what these things point to, because God provides, and He had the ability to provide in these ways that would not be normal, especially ravens bringing in food. Would that be the normal way for things to happen? No. And then we're going to get into this story here about the widow. And as Steve alluded to, something that's going to happen in this story. And we're going to see how this proves some things as well. And proves things to her. So, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. And we'll see as we go further, too, because Elijah does get to a point where he even reacts. He's afraid because of some of the things going on. But then at least he gets past that. We'll read that in the future as well. But yes, ma'am. So we see Elijah go. Let's start in in verse 8 of chapter 17, we're going to read about what's about to take place here. It says that, so after he left this area, now it says, then the word of the Lord came to him saying, arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and stay there. Behold, I have commanded a widow there to provide for you. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, please get me a little water in the jar that I may drink. As she was going to get it, he called to her and said, please bring me a piece of bread in your hand. But she said, as the Lord your God lives, I have no bread. I'm gathering a few sticks that I may go and prepare for me and my son so that we may eat it and die. So just kind of think of some of the things that she's stating. And then verse 13, it says, then Elijah said to her, do not fear. Go, do as you have said, but make a little bread cake from it first and bring it out to me. It says, the Lord God of Israel, the bowl of flour shall not be exhausted, nor shall the jar of oil be empty until the day that the Lord sends rain on the face of the earth. So we see here he's stating something about his stating this is from God. So she went and did according to the word of Elijah, and she and he and her household ate for days. The bowl of flour was not exhausted, nor did the jar of oil become empty, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke through Elijah. So, I put on here, does Elijah's actions convince her of something? And what is it? Well, before we get there, I'm getting ahead of myself. That's once we get down to the end of verse 24. So Elijah, we see here in this section that Elijah states that these supplies are not going to run out. The flour in the bowl and the oil in the jar. We saw that in verse 12. Now, while Elijah is still with the widow, we see a new event happening. And what happens next? It was something that Steve was alluding to. Somebody dies. Okay, her son dies. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I think she just, this happens to be because of this famine that's going on. She has very little. And, you know, that she's already worried about this. She knows that there's very little, and he's asking for something from her. And I think it's just her attitude towards that, and anybody else free to chime in, but I think that that's what it's pointing to, because she says there, let me get back to verse 12. It says, you know, because you see this, but she said, as the Lord your God lives, I have no bread, only a handful of flour. So she doesn't have bread, which is what he was asking for. She's got just a little bit of flour, a handful of flour in a bowl, and a little of oil in a jar. And behold, I'm gathering a few sticks that I may go in and prepare for me and my son that we may eat and die. So that's what I am pulling from there, is that it's just the idea of because of this. Yes, yes. That's what I'm gathering. Any comments or thoughts on that? Right.
When you think about it in terms of even today, faith this woman must have had on some basis.
Yeah.
Because here it is, to me that verse tells me that she expects to die.
Yeah.
That was her intent. Not intent, but that was what the Bible word, situation comes or something. And yet, Elijah says, bring me food first.
And she does.
And she does.
Yeah. Something greater.
And think about people outside of this country in particular, Christians, that are living in countries that have families.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of them. They live day to day. And where they live on their faith is much the same thing. That somehow God will come. And they keep praying.
Yeah. I don't think we recognize how blessed we are in that department. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. So we see, like Wally was pointing out, that she does You know, even though she's making these statements, she does have some belief because she goes on to do these things. And then I think it strengthens after the next thing that's going on, you know, as far as with her when her son dies. Yes, sir, Mark. Right, and but he does state who he was, so I think it's a little more than just someone begging. But I understand the point you're making. Yes, sir. You had another thought.
Yeah.
Well, she is, yes. Because I think that's what it, to the point that Wally was bringing up. Okay, because here, there's not much. She doesn't have much.
Right.
And she knows, it states that she was commanded to provide for him. What exactly that means or how she knew, I don't know. But there is some sense that she knows she needs to provide for him. And although what's going on right here, the way she states it, she's not, how do I put it? She's not stating it in a optimistic way, I guess you could say. She's saying, hey, we don't have much, you know, we're going to eat this and die, but she knows she needs to provide for him. And she does sacrifice because she does provide for him. So even though she states some of these things, she's bringing them out, but her actions, she still does all of this. She still provides for him. So that's one thing that we can pull from there. Yes. All right. And what Linda's talking about is in Luke 4:25, because we will look at that a little bit, because we also have there where it's talking about how long this drought was, because it tells us that it's that lady. So that makes it clear that the time that it references in Luke is also talking about this same part that we're talking about here. And we'll see that in a little here in the real shortly. Any other comments, good comments and thoughts? No? Okay. So we see that we're going to see that the widow's son dies. Let's start reading in verse 17, that's 1 Kings chapter 17, verse 17. It says, now it came about after these things that the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became sick, and his sickness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. So she said to Elijah, what do I have to do with you, O man of God? You have come to me to bring my iniquity to remembrance and to put my son to death. He said to her, give me your son. Then he took him from her bosom and carried him up to the upper room where he was living and laid him on the bed, or on his bed. He called to the Lord and said, O Lord, my God, have you also brought calamity to the widow with whom I am staying? by causing her son to die. Then he stretched himself upon the child three times and called to the Lord and said, O Lord, my God, I pray you, let this child's life return to him. And verse 22 says, the Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child returned to him, and he revived. Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper room into the house and gave him to his mother. And Elijah said, see, your son is alive. Then the woman said to Elijah, now I know that you are a man of God and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth. So we saw beforehand, she was already showing some belief out of her actions, but it started off, it was talking about Elijah, his God. And then here, she knows for certain, without a doubt, because of her son being raised, that he is God. And that these things that Elijah says is truth and from that God. Yes, sir, Alex, you had a comment? We will see some, you know, we definitely know that we see those things in the future. But in these points, you know, it's trying to like it does when Jesus does things, but it's to prove who they are. In this case, it's to prove that Elijah is a prophet of God. And she can trust in that. She shows that she does by these things that took place. We got to remember, because these things took place, never changed who God was. He's always been this God. But by these things taking place, proved something. And that's what, when these things come about, that's what it proves. It proves that these men are speaking from God. The things that they say are the things that the Lord is saying. We have just a minute or two. Any other comments or thoughts? Okay, so I'll ask this one question then. Because it's the one I started asking a while ago when I got ahead of myself. So does Elijah's actions convince her of something, and what is it?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So it points that out, you know, that she even states that these things coming from Elijah, she knows they are true. And these are, as Linda said, these are things because you've got the truth versus these false prophets. And I think I am getting buzzed. So thank you all for all your good comments and thoughts. And we will pick up here in our next class.